people are sometimes intimidated by opera. They think it's some stuffy sort of art form, but it contains all the elements of the art. It's so rich. It's got everything in it, something for everybody.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Turnbull. I'm from Ottawa. The thing that sort of took me from music theater over to opera and to classical music is that I find the music to be much more complex, more interesting, something that I think could keep me absorbed for a long period of time. I love music theater as well. I find it incredible that people can do so many shows, like 8 shows a week, and still keep it fresh and exciting, and I think that that's amazing that they can do that. But I'm not sure that that would be the right direction for me personally. So with opera, you know, you go on a shorter contract and you don't do as many performances. There's always sort of something new coming up.
You know how often the content of opera might tend to be stereotypical or sexist towards women. Like, does that bother you? Or?
A lot of the time we're looking at things that are sort of historical. And unfortunately, that's the context at that time. They were that way. And I think when you juxtapose that historical period of time when women were treated that way with the way we're able to function now, you can appreciate the kind of strides that we've made, and then it makes you really aware of how fortunate we are and how far we've come. When you play that, you get a sense of what it must be like to live like that. And there are women that still live like that, as we know, in the world. And it makes you very, very grateful of where we are. Just, aware of the fact that there are people living like that, and maybe there's something we can do to help. As an opera singer, you almost have two lives, because a lot of the time when you're working, you're traveling, you're on the road, so you're away from home. You're not living with your family, with your things around you. You're living with whatever you can cram into 2 huge suitcases, which sometimes is not as much as you think, because you end up taking things with you for so many different occasions. You have to bring your gym wear, and you have to bring your formal wear, and you have to bring your everyday wear, and you have to bring music and books, and you know, and sometimes you're going someplace like now in Hamilton, we're in the middle of change of seasons. What you need to bring stuff for, it might snow, but then it might be 25 degrees, so it's difficult. So you're traveling, and the wonderful thing is you get to see new places, meet new people, but then again you miss your old people, and your family, your friends, and you miss your home, and the very things about it that are exciting are also sometimes the things that make it difficult. When you're away working, you need to be very conscious of a lot of things. You need to be trying to get a lot of sleep. You need to really be conscious of eating well and of staying healthy. Of course, that's your primary concern, is to not get sick, because that obviously is a catastrophe. It's in some companies, some really large companies, they will have covers for your role. So if you do get sick, there is someone to go on. But in smaller companies, generally the rule is they don't have anybody. And if someone gets sick, they have to scramble around and try and fly somebody in at the last minute. And it's very, very difficult. So that's a major concern. It's a concern even when you're not working. Because if you're not away on a contract, chances are you're at home working on repertoire and you have auditions. And that can be difficult for your family as well. My husband and my son had a cold not that long ago. And I, you know, I was like, I'm sleeping in another room, and don't touch that, and don't drink from my glass. And so you have to get a little bit paranoid. But when I'm at home, I try and be a mom and a wife, and I enjoy lots of other pursuits. I work on my own. I sing daily, usually. And I have a singing teacher in New York who I try and go see whenever I can. As a rule, people generally work with coaches. They work with singing teachers and coaches. So I'll tell you the difference between those two. is a singing teacher will concentrate a lot on the technical aspects of singing, of your breath and of how you formulate the vowels and those kinds of things. A coach is someone who you'll go to with a piece of music that you're trying to learn, and they play it on the piano. So they'll play whatever it is, they'll be playing it on the piano. While they're playing, they're listening to you, and they're listening for interpretation. So they're listening for your emotions that are coming through the music. They're listening to your diction in all of the different languages. They're very good at languages, so they might have to help you with your Italian pronunciation or your French or your German or your Russian or whatever. So their job is incredible because they're sitting there playing some very difficult music. At the same time, their ears are really listening to you and what's coming out of your mouth. So those are the kinds of people you work with. Some people also work with, you know, drama coaches, or they do special classes in relaxation. Most university degrees where you're a major in voice will have as a requirement that you study German, Italian, and French. Those are the main three. I've done a fair bit of German because I lived in Germany for 3 years. Just through singing in the languages, you stay on top of the pronunciation generally, and you have a fairly good grasp of the language itself. One of my very favorite operas is the last one I did here in Hamilton 3 years ago, is Eugene Onegin, which is a Russian opera by Tchaikovsky, and I love that opera. The music is so beautiful, and the story is an incredible story based on the Pushkin poem. It's actually like a long narrative story. And as a mezzo, I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't say that Carmen is one of my favorites, which it is. It's a fantastic opera. I also love a lot of Puccini operas. The melodies just are so beautiful, and the stories are so riveting and wonderful. I've been recently involved in a new Canadian opera, and I have to say it's become a real personal favorite, and I hope it'll become a favorite of Canadian audiences or audiences all over the world, because it's a fantastic piece. It's called Philomena, and it's by a Canadian composer and a Canadian librettist. The composer is John Estacio, who was born in Barrie but lives now in Calgary and Edmonton, and John Murrell is the librettist, and he lives in Calgary and in Banff. And it's based on the true story of an Italian immigrant woman who moved to the Crow's Nest Pass between Alberta and BC. Her family moved there in about the 1915, 18, somewhere in there, I can't remember for sure, but the story takes place in 1922, and she gets involved with a bunch of other Italian immigrants in the Crow's Nest Pass who were bootlegging alcohol over the border between Alberta and BC and Alberta and the States. And it ends up that she and the head bootlegger end up killing an Alberta provincial policeman, sort of by accident. It's an amazing story, and they are both accused of the murder, but one of them didn't do it. The gun went off. They don't really know. Even to this day, they're not sure who pulled the trigger, and of course, neither of them said they did it. And so they were both accused, and they were both hung for this murder. And it's a fantastic story. And there's a love triangle, and it's in Italian and in English. So it was premiered in Calgary last year and was performed again in Banff last summer. It was a co-production between the Banff Centre for the Arts and Calgary Opera. And it's going to be put on again in a year's time at the NAC in Ottawa. The story is terrific, true Canadian story, Canadian cast, and written by Canadians, and it's a beautiful piece, very lyric, almost kind of Puccini-esque, beautiful melodies and lots of drama.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
Do you find that a younger audience would respond more to modern opera, or...?
It depends. I think always the story is really important. I think the accessibility of the music is important too. I think people like melodies, they like tunes, but the thing about modern opera that's so interesting is that you can use tunes where you really want them, and then you can go to a sort of a more modern atonal effect in various other parts of the piece, which is exactly what Philomena does. There are parts that are very angular and, quote, atonal, which is that the melody is sort of broken down and it's used to great effect. I love that combination. I find personally, the kind of music I can relate to more is something where I feel like I can hear something that I could go away and sing in a way. I've been involved in some modern pieces as well that I have found to be very effective. In general, I find them much more difficult to work on. They're harder to learn. Sometimes the vocal range can be really extreme. So they're really challenging on a certain level and can be very rewarding because of that. You have to work so hard to make them work. And I think that in terms of the audience, perception, it's a very personal thing. Some people love the classics, you know, it's just like anything else in theater, but some people like to be challenged a little bit more. As far as young people are concerned, I think there are some incredible things going on in modern works that are really riveting for younger people. You know, they can't relate as well to people standing around in big puffy dresses, you know, because that's not their experience. At the same time, those stories are classic for a reason. The stories are timeless. And I think once you get past that perception of people just standing around in dresses, if you actually really listen to the music and watch the drama, I think people of all ages can relate. My son has come to lots of operas from the time he was little, and he enjoyed a lot of them. You know, even something like Romeo and Juliet, you know, which is a classic story, but an older story. But he loves that one.
Can you talk about Otello now?
As far as my character is concerned, I'm a lady in waiting to Desdemona, who's married to Otello. And my husband is one of his high-ranking officers, but who is very, very jealous. My husband, Iago, feels that he's never been promoted as far as he should have been. And in fact, someone was promoted past him, and he's very jealous and is very manipulative. And I believe that I see a side of him that most people don't see, because he says at one point in the opera, in a quartet, he says some very nasty things to me, and he forces me to give him a handkerchief, which he then plants in another man's apartment to make it look like Desdemona is having an affair. It was actually Desdemona's handkerchief. So this ends up being a very crucial aspect of the opera. And at the end, when Desdemona has been killed, I come in and I find her with Otello, and she's been killed. And all of the men come running in as I scream, and I confront Iago, and I say, you know, are you the one who basically set this all up? And I know that it was him. So basically, I'm the one who blows the whistle on my own husband. And then he kills me. So, it's a tragic story. I mean, Desdemona dies, Otello has killed her out of jealousy, then Iago kills me, and then Otello kills himself. Yeah, everyone's dying all over the place, which is sort of typical opera as well.
Do you want to comment on the fact that the husband is black as well?
Of course, that's a big aspect of the opera, and the fellow who's doing it is not black. So through the whole rehearsal period, it has been something that's been in my mind, although I know he is, but he hasn't appeared to be on a daily basis. At that time when Shakespeare wrote the story, you know, all of those stereotypes and prejudices were still such a huge part of society. It's hard for us as a modern, you know, 21st century audience to really relate on that level, I think, because our society, in particular Canada, is so interracial, so mixed racially, that we don't think anything of seeing all kinds of different... I don't, anyway. It's hard to appreciate how he must have stuck out. And the fact that our Otello is also 6'5", and a really big, you know, big, strong guy, is going to make him really stick out on the stage, and of course then he'll be the only black man there, and that'll also bring him to prominence. But the fact that he was such a strong leader and carried armies with him, and incredible respect of all these other people, must have been really singular at that time.
Thank you.
I've had, you know, bits of sets fall down on top of my head, and I've had my costume, one terrible incident where a long part of my train got caught on something and I was running in the opposite direction and it just went rip, and I was sure that, you know, that my underwear was going to be fully exposed, but luckily it was just the hem of the costume. But that was pretty tricky and pretty obvious, I think, to the audience as well. At that time, I sort of stopped with a jerk because it just held me right up. But yeah, there were always crazy things happening. Well, I think one of the important things is to always listen to your own instincts. Because if you're going to, it doesn't matter what your discipline is, if it's dance or singing or acting, I think you really need to listen to your own heart. If the thing you're working on or the people you're working with, if you have a teacher, I'm again specifically for singing, but it could be for dance or whatever as well, the different things work for different people. And you really need to know and ask yourself, is this the right thing for me? Is this teacher working for me? Is this program working for me? Because you may feel like you have a lot of time, but you don't want to get off on the wrong foot either and have to undo things. So you need to ask yourself, does this feel right? In terms of singing, you know, if it hurts, it's not right. It shouldn't hurt. It should be work, but it should not actually be painful. Keep a constant check on how things are going, and if you don't feel that it's right, it's okay to change, and it should never be perceived as insulting to whoever you're working with. Again, people understand things and relate to things in different ways, and if it's not working for you, it just may be the fact that you and this particular person or this group that you're with or whatever are just not, you know, on the same page at that particular point in time. And so you might need to try something else, but that's okay. I think all forms of arts are a continual process of learning, reevaluating, exploring, changing, and moving forward. And that continues through your whole life as an artist, and that's a good thing. But it's very easy at times to be safe and say, okay, I'm just here, I'll just stay here and keep going. Don't be afraid to explore. Don't be afraid to try different things. Don't be afraid to question things, because that's how you learn and that's how you find out exactly where you are. And that's really important, I think. One can start singing at a fairly early age. The thing is, physically, of course, we don't finish growing for quite some time, whereas, you know, someone can play the piano or the violin from the time they're old enough to sit up, just about. It's difficult for us and different for us because our body is our instrument. Now, that being said, I started singing in choirs when I was in grade 6. And I think as a young person, a group like that is a great place to start, because there's no pressure on you as an individual, but you have to work as a group. It helps you to really learn to use your ear, because you're not always singing the melody. Sometimes you're having to sing in harmonies, and that's a terrific tool for later in life. So I think choirs are great for young people, and that's not to say you can't do individual lessons and things as well as a younger person, but you have to just know that your body is going to change, your voice is going to change, and not push anything. You need to be very careful as a young person, because your body is not ready for some of this really big work. Obviously, you're not ready to sing an opera when you're 12 years old. It's a very athletic pursuit. Singing in general, even pop singing or any kind of singing, is very, very physical. And again, you only have one voice. You don't want to ruin your vocal cords. It takes a lot of aerobic strength. And, you know, sometimes you're running around and singing and you're wearing a heavy costume. And, you know, it takes a lot of work from you physically. So it takes time to build those muscles. So you have to be sure not to push things or rush things. Just certain things can only happen within a certain time frame, just because of the nature of the instrument itself. People are sometimes intimidated by opera. They think it's some stuffy sort of art form, but it contains all the elements of the arts: drama, orchestral music, dance, costuming, art in terms of sets and props and singing. And it's so rich. It's got everything in it, something for everybody. And I think young kids think, oh, it's just so old, but it's again, it can be very, very relevant. And there's a concern often that people think they're not going to understand what's being said. What I did in one of these school sessions is I took a bunch of songs in different languages, And I sang them one at a time. And I said, after I sing it, I want you to tell me if I was happy or sad or angry or in love or what. And I did something in German, Italian, Russian, French, and they knew exactly what each piece was about, because the music tells you what it's about. And hopefully, if the singers are expressive and acting well, their body and their face and their movement will tell you what it's about. So those are all things that help you understand what's happening. Also, when you go to the theater, they give you a program with a breakdown of the story, so you read that, and that helps you know what's going on. And in North America now, it's very common to, I think it's almost without exception, the theaters have surtitles, so they have a projection of the text as it's being sung, so you can read and you know exactly what's happening. So it's not as daunting a prospect as one might think, and I think that that's really important for younger people to know and understand, and that would hopefully, you know, not inhibit them from coming and enjoying the whole thing. People show up in jeans, and people show up. I mean, it might also break down barriers for them to know that. I mean, we're backstage when we're not on stage. Backstage watching the hockey game. You know, everyone's backstage doing all kinds of things and wearing jeans and hanging out and looking like everybody else looks. There's a lot of young people involved in opera.
I'm going to play a song called The Hurricane. Bye, Bronwyn! Listening to Radio Free School on CFMU. Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learning. I'm drawing a tree, and I'm copying it, because I have a nature journal, and you copy things when you have a nature journal. Can I have my chocolate chips now? And then I drew the flower. So that's what I saw. So let's move on, buddy.
Where should we move?
Off we go!
Okay, let's do it.
When you hold my staff and I'll videotape where we go, okay?
Okay.
Give me it. I'll pretend that I'm Frodo, Mommy.
You're Frodo?
Mm-hmm. See where it leads to. Okay. Come on. Remember that place over the bridge?
Yeah.
Does it lead there? Follow me. I'm the leader, Mommy.
Come in.
Onto the path. Follow me. I spy a hole in the water, and the hole is big. I'll tell you how big it is. It is this big. Big enough to fit a person. A person can go through that hole and discover. That's what I spy.
And did you spy gold?
Yeah, gold. I'll tell you where we are. We're far, far away from home. In the woods. Far away. not near the stream. Stream. But we're far away.
Let's move on, Mommy.
Come a bit more that way.
What are we trying to do?
I'm trying not to step on them, on snail shells.
Mommy, this is pretty steep.
Mommy, wait. Mommy, lift up, off, lift up that foot there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you stepped on one, Mommy. One of the snail shells.
Sorry, but I think they're dead already.
No, they're not.
They're not. There's nothing in there. This is a pretty steep hill, isn't it?
I know.
How far do you think we're going to make here?
Oh! It seems really not steep.
Why are we coming up here?
Oh, to discover something.
Whoa. I feel like I need a hand. My shoes are slippery.
Mm-hmm. Mine aren't.
Hey, look what I found, Mommy. A ball.
A ball.
Can you take it? Yes. Yeah.
What is it?
It's a neat piece of rock which can stand. It has a flat end. Ending, so it can stand by itself.
Mm.
And look what I found. I found a golf ball and I found that neat little stone, but I'm looking at the grass.
Okay, careful now. Up here because it's pretty steep.
We're like adventurous people climbing up a steep mountain.
Hey, mm-hmm. Brambles.
This is a mountain, Mommy.
Maybe it's a mountain. What should we call it?
It should be called Mountain Which Has Lots of Things. Mountain Lots of Things. Does it have lots of things?
A gorilla nest? Hey, there's a gorilla nest. Where? Where's the gorilla nest?
No, I'm just kidding. Gorillas do make nests in the ground, right?
But you tricked me.
But you know there's no mountain gorillas in this country.
Look, Mommy, look what I found, a golf ball.
Can we sit down?
Nope, we'll still climb up this mountain. Look at that rock I spot. We'll go down, Mommy.
Is that already?
Yes. Actually, we'll keep climbing up, Mommy.
No. Okay. It's very steep here now.
No, it's not a hill, it's a mountain.
It's a very steep mountain.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.